You are listening to the True Frequency Radio Network.
No hate, no hype, no fear.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. We are live. My name is JD, and this is your daily dose of deprogramming. Thank you very much for tuning into the broadcast once again. All of you guys who are out there and have found us and continue to tune in every day, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you guys joining us once again. Also want to tell you that I appreciate very much all of you who have been sending us emails. The email avalanche has begun, and all of the responses have been overwhelmingly positive. And I can't thank you guys enough. The support has just been absolutely wonderful. And I know Rob and Jeff, the co-creators of Red Pill Reports, are also very appreciative. Those guys work so hard behind the scenes to help me make all of this happen. In fact, none of this would be happening without them. They had, in fact, rescued me from the clutches of obscurity. They found me talking to myself in a closet, and I'm sure between the two of them thought, hey, we could put a microphone in front of this guy. So that's what they did, and that's why we are here, and we are here once again. Today is Wednesday, the 19th day of November, and this is what we do every day, guys. Monday through Friday, from 10 o'clock until noon Central Time, we are live. Spend the first hour going over all of the pertinent news of the day, and then we always have a fantastic guest in the second hour. And today, as usual, guys, will be no exception. Doreen Hannes is going to be joining us today. Now, for those of you who don't know Doreen, her website is truthfarmer.com. You can go check out her website. She has been an avid student of the effects of NAFTA and GATT upon the United States and the people who live here for a very long time, since NAFTA was ratified back in the mid-90s, essentially. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about on the radio show very often is this idea that everybody needs to get self-sufficient. We all need to get land. We need to be able to grow our own food. We need to be able to start managing our communities in a much more effective manner. But as it turns out, the powers that shouldn't be don't want any of us to do that, and they are trying to head us off at every single pass that still exists for us. So Doreen is going to come and talk about some of the current developments in the world of self-sufficiency and in the world of self-efficiency, I guess would be a good way to put it, and talk a little bit about some of the agencies that are part of the government that are supposed to be working for our benefit that are actually not working for our benefit, and some of the things that we can do about that. So very much looking forward to our conversation at 11 o'clock Central Time with Doreen Hannes. I think you guys will take a lot away from this, especially if you are one of these people that wants to be self-sufficient. It's it's a good point. I was on Roger Sales' show last night, which kind of devolved into a roundtable discussion about sovereignty. But one of the points that was raised during the show, I think, will carry over into this show as well. And it's that, you know, if you want to be self-sufficient, or if you want to do anything as an American anymore, you have to understand that you're in a battle. You know, that there are forces working against your wishes, and unless you can identify those forces, unless you identify the adversaries, it's very difficult to mount an offensive against them. So that is why we're going to have Doreen on a little bit later today. She will help us put some names and faces to these organizations that are keeping us, well, from achieving what it is that we should be able to achieve here in America, which is self-sufficient communities, all interconnected, all working together. So very much looking forward to that phone conversation at 11 o'clock. I want to mention also that tomorrow Our guest will be James Perloff. A lot of you guys may know James Perloff from his book, Truth is a Lonely Warrior, which the subtitle is Unmasking the Forces Behind Global Destruction. James is a historian. I mean, there's probably no better way to classify him other than just to say he is a monumentally well-documented historian. And sometimes it's beneficial to look back so that we can look forward more effectively. So tomorrow, be here at 11 o'clock, James Perloff, for a history lesson, but it will be relevant history to what is going on in the world right now. I can assure you, one of my favorite people to speak with in general. Also, just wanted to real quickly thank everybody who is supporting Truth Frequency. You can go to truthfrequency.com, and you can listen live to our show and to many of the other quality shows that are on Truth Frequency. And please, if you have a couple dollars to donate, hit that donate button. Give them a couple of dollars. Let them know that we are all on the right track and that you actually value hearing my voice. That would make me really happy. Anyway, let's move on, ladies and gentlemen. There is a lot of things going on this crazy rock as we tumble through space, and much of it coming from around the world right now. I'm going to start kind of with the more obscure stuff going on internationally, and then we'll get into the stuff that we all know and love to talk about, Russia and Ukraine and things like that. But there were more than 600 trafficking victims from Myanmar and Bangladesh, and they were rescued yesterday off the South Asian coast, according to a Navy spokesman in Dhaka. And he says this is the single largest operation of its kind, according to Bangladesh authorities. The victims were found aboard a 22-meter-long trawler flying the Myanmar flag, off of the Cox's Bazar, which is about 250 miles from the capital of Dhaka. And of course, this is Commodore Rashid Ali of the Navy there in Dhaka. And he said that the trawler had been waiting another vessel, which would carry the trafficking victims on a deep sea voyage all the way to Malaysia. But Bangladesh Coast Guards say that people are often trafficked, expecting their boats to sail on to Malaysia, but then they are often kidnapped and taken to jungle hideouts in Thailand, where they are held for ransom. So thank goodness these 600 poor trafficking victims were rescued yesterday. Good news coming out of Bangladesh. Now moving into Russia, who seem to be a permanent addition to the international news these days. And this is a speech that Putin gave yesterday in Moscow. He says the United States is working very hard to subdue Moscow, but will never succeed. He said they want to humiliate us, they want to subdue us, and they want to solve their problems at our expense. This was at the end of a four-hour meeting with his core support group yesterday called the People's Front. He says no one in history has ever managed to achieve this with Russia, and no one ever will. And that, of course, triggered a wave of standing ovations. Putin's tough talk reflected the strain in ties between Moscow and Washington, who are at loggerheads over the crisis in the Ukraine, where the West has accused Russia of promoting and arming separatist rebellions. During the meeting, Putin also repeatedly urged Russian firms, including those in the agriculture and defense sectors, to boost their sales on domestic markets following the tit-for-tat sanctions with Western triggered, obviously over the row in Ukraine. What a short memory we have that we forgot that we put the junta in Kiev to begin with. So more escalation happening now between Russia and the United States. Par for the course, ladies and gentlemen. And Germany throwing their hats in the ring regarding this entire Ukraine-Russia situation. German's foreign minister said yesterday that he was not optimistic about an end to the conflict in Ukraine because of the dangerous escalation of fighting in the east. Frank-Walter Steinmeier made the downbeat assessment after NATO's Secretary General spoke of a very serious buildup of troops, artillery, and air defense systems inside of Ukraine and on the Russian side of the border. Steinmeier was the first senior European minister to visit Moscow since July, in a sign of how relations between the West and Russia have dived to post-Cold War lows after the conflict in eastern Ukraine. He goes on to say that there are no grounds for optimism in the current situation. And he said this after leaving a press conference with Russia counterpart Sergei Lavrov in Moscow yesterday. So again, NATO still talking about the quote-unquote dangerous developing situation in Ukraine, and they're going to continue to beat that war drum as hard as they possibly can because it's pretty much their only option left, guys. That's pretty much what it comes down to. Putin has won for all intents and purposes. The Kenyan city of Mombasa is in the news again after being hit by killings after authorities there raided mosques. These attacks came hours after police raided two mosques they accuse of having links with militant Islamists in neighboring Somalia. One person was killed by the police raids, and more than 200 people were arrested. Witnesses said that masked youths armed with machetes then went on a rampage in the Kiswani area of the city, attacking people waiting at bus stops. More tragic violence occurring now in Africa, and again stemming from religious standpoints. And they say that the mosques that they raided had links with Somalian militant Islamic groups, Al-Shabaab, and have been used to create and train militants and also to store weapons. So big time raid going on in Mombasa and ended up boiling over into the streets where more tragedy took place. I'll tell you, being hacked to death by a machete, not on my top list, guys. Not at the top of my list for the way I want to go. Just laying that out there. Some interesting information coming out of Mr. Assange. Of course, we're talking about Julian Assange, who is the founder and owner of WikiLeaks. He was speaking at the Lisbon and Estoril Film Festival this last weekend, and Julian Assange affirmed that the whistleblowing website WikiLeaks is preparing to publish a fourth set of spy files, which is a series of leaked secret documents, similar to the ones that were released back in 2013. Many of you probably remember that they leaked 250 different documents from more than 90 different surveillance companies and revealed the extent of the secret global mass surveillance industry. And Assange was pretty vague about details in the new documents, however, and did not give specific information on the contents or on the date of their release, but we do have it on good authority now that there will be a release forthcoming from Wikipedia, and we'll just have to wait and see what that is going to entail. 40,000 Maasai were evicted from their homeland as a wealthy hunting group moves in, and we are talking about northern Tanzania, moving our way back to Africa. 40,000 Maasai, which are basically essentially a tribal group of individuals that have lived in Tanzania for so long, it's just ridiculous. They are being evicted from traditional grazing lands to make way for a quote-unquote wildlife corridor that an Emirati hunting group, whose clients reportedly include Prince Andrew and the Jordanian royal family, are going to be permitted to shoot game animals on. So the hunting block, operated by the Gulf-owned Ortello Business Corporation, has existed for years next to the world-famous Serengeti National Park. But it is sited on registered village land, home to several Maasai settlements and thousands of square miles of valuable grazing. The Tanzanian government has ordered the Maasai to vacate 15,000 square kilometers, ostensibly for conservation reasons, to create a wildlife corridor. But the Serengeti in which OBC and its clients are going to be allowed to shoot. So hunting apparently is large business in Tanzania, you guys. But critics are also saying that the Maasai themselves are an equally important part of the Tanzanian economy. And to many, they are the very image of Africa's wild places, you know, clad in brightly colored blankets, semi-nomadic warrior herdsmen adorn posters and tourist brochures throughout Tanzania. But now they're being evicted. And the last time this happened was when the British came in 1959. They asked these people to move once again, and they promised them grazing rights, and then they have reduced their range by as much as 40%, always in the name of conservation. So we see that same EPA tactic that happens here in the United States now bleeding over into Africa, and more people being removed from their homes for the love of profit and money. It's always profit over people, and that seems to be par for the course for this wonderful society that we live in. So there you go. Moving back to Palestine, nothing has been resolved in Palestine over the last day. So things are still very, very hot there right now. And as of yesterday, two Palestinian cousins armed with meat cleavers and a gun stormed a Jerusalem synagogue during morning prayers. And they killed four people in the city's bloodiest attack in years. And the police then killed the attackers in the shootout. The attack ratcheted up fears of sustained violence in a city already on edge amid soaring tensions over its most contested holy site. And Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu vowed to respond harshly, describing the attack as cruel murder of Jews who came to pray and were killed in a despicable manner. He immediately ordered the demolition of attackers' homes, as well as homes of Palestinians who carried out several other recent attacks. Police said the dead worshippers were three Americans and a Briton, and that all of them held dual Israeli citizenships. The attack occurred in Har Nof, which is an ultra-Orthodox neighborhood that has a large population of English-speaking immigrants. And then in a related story coming from Yahoo News right now, from the AP, Israel said also yesterday that it has sent notices to the families of several Palestinians in the West Bank implicated in attacks against Israelis to vacate their homes ahead of impending demolitions. The development indicated that Israel is intensifying its much maligned policy of punitive destruction of homes of suspected attackers. And the Israeli ministry, military said in recent weeks, an unspecified number of notices warning of impending house demolitions have been issued to Palestinian families in the West Bank. And these were ostensibly people whose relatives had carried out the attacks in recent weeks. And the military has said that families have 48 hours to petition against the notices, and should they fail to do so, or should the petitions be rejected, the homes would become immediately demolished. Also, on Monday, the Israeli police says they designated several homes in East Jerusalem for destruction or sealing, but were awaiting final government approval before going ahead. These destructions are based on instructions from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who earlier this month said the home destruction policy would be implemented in response to a wave of Palestinian attacks against against Israelis in Jerusalem, mostly against the background of tensions over a disputed holy site in the city. So, Palestinians not happy that they are still being occupied by Israel, and they are ramping up the attacks. And, of course, Israel is going to be responding by destroying more of the Palestinian homes, which, of course, we can see will be a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's just a cyclical cycle of violence. And I'm hopeful that the news coming out of the EU yesterday will start to put a stop to this as we move towards a two-state solution over there, which is, of course, what we are all hoping for here at Red Pill Reports, or at least what I'm hoping for here at Red Pill Reports. Zacharias Moussaoui, back in the news. Of course, he was one of the ones who has been blamed for the 9/11 terrorist attacks, and he has made some new accusations. Who knows if the accusations themselves were in order to get himself back in the news again. But from his cell in a maximum security prison, the terrorist, Zacharias Moussaoui, is reviving old allegations and making new ones against Al-Qaeda and a handful of Saudi royals. The 46-year-old French national is claiming that the Saudi embassy officials were involved in a plot to shoot down Air Force One to assassinate Bill Clinton and or Hillary Clinton during a trip to the UK. Moussaoui said he met with Secret Service agents several months ago and told them what he knew, and CNN reached out to the Secret Service for comment, and they have yet to respond. But in two handwritten letters filed this month in federal court in New York and in Oklahoma, Moussaoui claimed that during the time he was taking flying lessons in Norman, Oklahoma, he met with a Saudi prince and princess, and that she gave him money and provided funding for the 9/11 hijackers. Lawyers for the Saudi government have repeatedly denied connections, maintaining that Saudi Arabia was cleared by the 9/11 Commission. I wonder if the 9/11 Commission could have been slanted in some way to make it appear as if the Saudi government had nothing to do with it. Of course, we're going back now to ancient history, many, many years ago. Who even cares about 9/11 anymore? The murder of thousands of American innocents for no reason other than to promote war, probably not a big deal. But we also have the senator who has pulled out those 27 pages of redacted information and has essentially beaten around the bush and says that most of the redacted information had to do with the funding of the agenda for 9/11, and that most of that did come from Saudi Arabia. So, is Moussaoui telling the truth? I think that's probably true. I think that's probably pretty accurate. Moving on to some national news right now is a startling report from the Examiner. Under Obama, the U.S. personal freedom ranking has slipped below France. Americans' assessment of their personal freedoms has significantly declined under President Barack Obama, according to a new study from the Legatum Institute in London. And the United States now ranks below 20 other countries on this measure. The research shows that citizens of countries including France, Uruguay, and Costa Rica now feel they enjoy more personal freedom than Americans. Remember, We live in a country where you have to have a license to cut hair, ladies and gentlemen. Talk to me about freedom sometime. You need a license to cut hair. Ridiculous. As the Washington Examiner reported this morning, representatives of the Legatum Institute are in the U.S. this week to promote the sixth edition of their Prosperity Index, and the index aims to measure aspects of prosperity that typical gross domestic product measurements do not include, such as entrepreneurship and opportunity, education, and social capital. The freedom scores are based on polling data from 2013 indicating citizens' satisfaction with their nation's handling of civil liberties, freedom of choice, tolerance of ethnic minorities, and tolerance of immigrants. Polling data were provided by the Gallup World Poll Service, and the index is notable for the way it measures how free people feel, unlike other freedom indices that measure freedom by comparing government policies. And according to Legatum, and this is a quote, this is not a good report for Obama. And I think that's probably goes without saying. All you guys over at Legatum, probably not a good report for Obama. Personal freedoms in the United States at an all-time low. Wonderful. Senate Republicans rose. You guys choose between Team A and Team B. Remember, they all work for the banks. Senate Republicans rose in the defense of the National Security Agency on Tuesday by filibustering a bill that would have halted the agency's phone snooping program, saying it is now more critical than ever amid terrorist advancing in the Middle East and fears of homegrown terrorism in the United States. The vote, in which 41 Republicans and one Democrat banded together for the filibuster, leaves the most controversial part of the Patriot Act in place. And it also ends efforts to rein in the NSA program for the foreseeable future, because Republicans will be taking control of the chamber early next year and are unlikely to revisit the issue. So we thought maybe there would be a crack in the liner and that somebody would step up against the NSA and say nay, but that's not what's going to happen. So there you go. Moving into the heart of the country right now, I want to talk a little bit about Ferguson. Ferguson apparently is still a tinderbox, you guys. We're still waiting on the indictment of Darren Wilson, and I think that more time that goes by, the worse it is going to get there. And now the FBI has come out with a warning for law enforcement agencies nationwide that the grand jury's decision on whether a Missouri police officer will face charges for killing Michael Brown will likely lead to attacks on police officers and key infrastructure. So now we're talking again. This is a direct a directive from the FBI warning law enforcement agencies across the nation that when this grand jury decision comes out, it will very likely lead to violent attacks against police officers and key infrastructure across the country. So that is another indication. And again, you know, the FBI most likely already knows which way the wind is going to blow here, guys. And I think, you know, with that going on, the next story here, Nixon, who is the governor here in Missouri, Jay Nixon, signed an executive order activating the Missouri National Guard. He did this just yesterday afternoon. According to a news release, the role of the National Guard is going to be to support law enforcement during any period of unrest that might occur following the grand jury's decision concerning the investigation into the death of Michael Brown. He has also established that the Highway Patrol, the U.S. County Police, I'm sorry, the St. Louis County Police Department, and the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department will all operate as a unified command to keep members of the public safe, and to protect property of the banks, and while allowing citizens to exercise their constitutional rights as long as they stay in the free speech area and don't talk or film or report anything that's actually going on there. Most of that I just made up, but you can read between the lines as to say that's probably what's going to happen. And it has now come out also that President Jay Nixon has declared a state of emergency for at least the next month. It might blow up into a longer state of emergency than that, but that state of emergency has been issued now for Ferguson and the surrounding area, and it might have something to do with this fact that a group describing itself as a militant resistant to a corrupt police state has offered $5,000 for details of Ferguson's police officer Darren Wilson's whereabouts. And this is, of course, according to the Mail Online. Officer Wilson, who is 28, has been hiding on paid leave ever since he gunned down an unarmed teenager, Michael Brown, on the 9th of August. Now, in one of the series of incendiary tweets, the RBG Black Rebels have stated, "We are paying $5,000 cash for location of Officer Darren Wilson. They say this is real money. It's no joke. We don't want to commit a crime. We would just like to get his photo and ask him a few questions. And though the RBG Black Rebels insist this is not a bounty on the officer's head, there are some pretty inflammatory tweets that went out along with it, and that actual request for his whereabouts and the offering of $5,000 came in a slew of relatively incendiary Twitter tweets from this group. So I wonder if obviously they're probably not going to be successful in tracking this guy down, but it does go to show you just how much of a tinderbox Ferguson still is. You know, we've got the two sides have been drawn, and they are ready to face off with one another. So we are here in Missouri, especially keeping a very close eye on Ferguson. And I also want to reiterate the warning from the FBI that if you are out in one of these cities, Detroit, Chicago, another city where this unrest might develop, just keep your head on a swivel. Be safe, you know, pay attention to your surroundings, and potentially be ready to stay in your home if you have to. Officials are saying that residents of a Central Valley community where hundreds of home wells have run dry can now take hot showers. This is a story coming out of East Porterville, California, where the drought is still continuing and still disrupting people's lives. Andrew Lockman of the Tulare County Office of Emergency Services said Tuesday that they brought up portable showers for residents in East Porterville, and the ongoing drought has caused many of their showers, forcing them all to drink bottled water and bathe from buckets. Officials say the county is paying $30,000 a month for the showers set up in a church parking lot. And I'll tell you what, my heart and prayers go out to the people of California right now. You guys are in an absolutely orchestrated drought right now, and they are driving down the value of your homes. They're going to make it so impossible for you to live there, so you have to leave. That's the name of the game. That's the agenda that's going on. And come back at 11 o'clock. We're going to take a three-minute break. We'll come back from this. We'll go back into the news. We've got major economic stuff happening. We've also got some major health news today. But we'll get back into this story about the drought in California and about the agency's agenda against your own self-sufficiency when we come back at 11 with Doreen Honnes. So do stay tuned. This is the Red Pill Report for today. Red Pill Reports.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN. Worldwide.
A sudden change in the wind. The day grows dark as ominous clouds move in and lightning begins to carve arcs in the sky. And you realize you are not prepared.
I am telling you, take cover.
The number of intense storms is increasing exponentially in the U.S. Tornadoes, hurricanes, flooding, and droughts are happening with greater magnitude and frequency. If you are choosing to rely on the government to save you,
and no one's coming to help them,
you could be dead wrong. The first step towards self-reliance in the face of disaster is a visit to MyPatriotSupply.com. There you'll find the absolute best prices on storable foods, non-GMO seeds, emergency water filtration devices, and so much more. All orders over $49 qualify for free shipping in the lower 48. Visit us online or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. And speak to one of our preparedness advisors today. Remember, before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the iodine now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a 1-year supply. Your future looks really great. I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the MicroPlant Powder family. MicroPlant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at MUSA.org.
The State of Cannabis with Liam Sheff.
Mondays, Country Frequency Radio.
Programming, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. It is the bottom of the hour right now, and we are live like we are every day, Monday through Friday, from 10 until noon Central. Thank you guys very much for visiting the website at redpillreports.com. The co-creators, Jeff and Rob, do such a great job keeping that thing up and running. I could not possibly do any of this by myself, and thanks to those guys. Want to remind all of you that not only is the site a great place to go to look for unique and interesting information because the website is updated every day. But also, if you go to the show section, you will be able to follow along with all of these news articles as we're going over them and see some of the ones that we're not able to get to. So I appreciate everybody who has been going to the site every day. Want to just reiterate the fact that without all of you out there listening, I would essentially be just here talking to my cat. And to be honest, his attention span is very short. And he's heard most of this stuff before. So I appreciate all of you guys being there more than I can even explain to you in words. I don't have the language necessary to tell you guys how thankful I am for all of you joining us every single day. Let's hop back into some national news. There's a couple other big stories coming out right now. And probably the most important one is coming out of New Mexico. And it is a interview that took place yesterday with the mayor of the town of Artesia, which is in New Mexico, and his report is saying that almost every single illegal immigrant family traveling from Central America to the United States has been released from the special facility meant to hold them in New Mexico. And of course, this is according to the mayor of that town, Philip Birch. He told KSVP yesterday in New Mexico that the releases defy Homeland Security Jay Johnson's own pledge in July to make sure those who ended up at the facility were quickly deported from the United States. Instead, 82 illegal immigrants were released last week, and 77 were let go this week, and only five total have been reported, according to Mr. Birch. So, we talk about the Security and Prosperity Partnership, and we talk about the North American Union, and it looks like the administration and the corporations are moving forward on those plans with or without us. We had that big story about AT&T purchasing Lucasell the other day, which is going to create the largest, I think 70 million total users in Mexico are going to now be folded into the AT&T family. So you see these corporations reaching across the borders and doing basically whatever it is that they want to do. And so that's what's going on there. Moving on away from the national news, let's get into some economic stuff right now. Want to jump really quick to the markets. The Dow is down just a little bit right now, about 29 points. Probably not going to be a lot of big moves in a midweek. 1180 for gold right now, down about $16 from yesterday. Silver following suit, down a whole point to $16.02. Again, the laws of economics have completely flown out of the door if you understand supply and demand. Crude oil is very flat right now, no change whatsoever in one direction or another, sitting at $74.61 a barrel. Want to draw your attention to a amazing story Tyler Durden broke on Zero Hedge. And this is a follow-up from a story that they did a few months ago. But now this information has been corroborated. And this is huge, guys. Ukraine has now admitted that its gold is gone. And a quote from the central bank is saying that there is almost no gold left in the central vault. So back in March, at a time when the IMF supported and reported that Ukraine's official gold holdings as of the end of February, so just as the State Department facilitated this coup against former President Viktor Yanukovych was concluding, they said back in March that Ukraine had 42.3 tons of gold, or 8% of its total holdings in reserves in gold. Okay, so that was back in March. And notably, under the previous hated president, Mr. Yanukovych, Ukraine's gold reserves had constantly increased, hitting a record high just before this presidential coup. Now, Zero Hedge reported a very strange event that allegedly took place just after the Ukrainian presidential coup, and it corresponded to one specific source, which was quoted in saying that a mysterious operation under the cover of night, Ukraine's gold reserves were promptly loaded on board an unmarked plane, which subsequently took the gold to the U.S. Now, that was a report, of course, broken by Zero Hedge back in March. And the details of that report are as follows. They said that tonight at 2 o'clock in the morning, an unregistered transport plane took off from Boryspil Airport. And according to the Boryspil staff, prior to the plane's appearance, four trucks and two cargo minibuses arrived at the airport, all with their license plates missing. 15 people in black uniforms, masks, and body armor all stepped out, some armed with machine guns, and these people loaded the plane with more than 40 heavy boxes. After this, several mysterious men arrived and also entered the plane. The loading was carried out in a significant hurry. After unloading, the plateless cars immediately left the runway, and the plane took off on an emergency basis. Airport officials who saw this mysterious quote-unquote special operation immediately notified the administration of the airport, which, however, strongly advised them not to meddle in other people's business. Later, the editors were called by one of the senior officials of the former Ministry of Income and Fees, who reported that, according to him, tonight, on the orders of the new leaders of Ukraine, all of the gold reserves of the Ukraine were taken to the United States. Now, needless to say, there was not an official confirmation of any of this actually taking place. And in fact, the first report that appeared on Zero Hedge, they mused the idea whether or not the price of Ukraine's liberation was somehow involved with the handover of its gold to the Fed at a time when Germany was actively seeking to repatriate its own physical gold located at the bedrock of the New York Fed. And it also led to unusual mainstream media mockery, and all of that happening, of course, until now. An interview on Ukraine TV with none other than the head of the Ukraine Central Bank made the stunning admission yesterday that in the vaults of the central bank, there is almost no gold left. He says there is a small amount of gold bullion left, but it is just 1% of our reserves. Oh my goodness, ladies and gentlemen, so now we know almost without a doubt that gold was taken from Ukraine and flown to the United States. And as Ukraine further reports, this stunning revelation means not only has Ukraine been quietly depleting its gold throughout the year, but the latest official number, according to which Ukraine gold was 8 times higher than the reported 1%, was completely fabricated. And that real number is ostensibly 90% lower than what they actually reported. And oddly enough, there was no official gold reduction just prior to the time when Victoria F the EU Nuland was planning Yanukovych's ouster, and shown above, quite the contrary. It is a little more than odd that it was during this period when Ukraine was supported by its Western allies that several $1 billion worth of physical gold, the people's gold, just vaporized. But in any event, now that the disappearance of Ukrainians' gold has been confirmed, perhaps it's time to refresh the unconfirmed story that a little after the current Ukraine regime took power, the bulk of Ukraine's gold was taken to the United States. Unbelievable reporting coming out of Zero Hedge, ladies and gentlemen, and what a fantastic follow-up from their story in March. It turns out that incident most likely did happen. And if it didn't happen, we do know for certain now that the Ukraine gold reserves are essentially gone. Unbelievable, ladies and gentlemen. And in related gold news, India is likely to announce new measures to curb gold imports as early as today, according to a senior finance ministry source. And they could also include restrictions on a group of private trading firms that have been allowed to bring in the precious metal. Shipments to the world's second largest gold buyer jumped fourfold in October from a year earlier, all the way up to $4.18 billion, raising concern about the country's fragile balance of payments. According to the source, they say they are working on it, and the measures to slow gold imports are almost ready and may be announced either today or tomorrow. The central bank restricted gold imports early in 2013 as India battled a balance of payment crisis triggered by the U.S. Federal Reserve's announcement that it would start to ease its program of quantitative easing. In addition to imposing a record high duty of 10% on overseas purchases of gold, the RBI introduced a rule making it mandatory to re-export a fifth of all bullion imports. So what they're essentially doing is they're going to force these people to, once they have turned this imported gold into jewelry, they're going to put a mandatory sale number on it that you have to sell that gold outside of the country in order to bolster some of the income to India. So that is what's going on in the gold market in India right now, which is also another indicator that the demand for physical is ridiculously high, and that if you can do anything you can to get yourself into physical right now, silver, gold, what have you, that is the right way to do it. Beans, bullion, and bullets. That's the name of the game here. And secret tapes hint at turmoil in the New York Fed team who was monitoring J.P. Morgan as the Federal Reserve Bank of New York moved to beef up its oversight of Wall Street 2 years ago. The team charged with supervising the nation's largest bank, J.P. Morgan Chase, was in turmoil. New York Fed examiners embedded at J.P. Morgan complained about being blocked from doing their jobs, and in frustration, some actually requested transfers. Top New York Fed managers knew about the problems, according to interviews and secret recordings of internal meetings obtained by ProPublica. Similar frustrations had surfaced among examiners at other banks as well. In meetings in early 2012, the manager Jonathan Kim described how bosses in the J.P. Morgan team had stymied examiners by blocking access to bank information and constrained independent inquiries into ways that ground everything to a halt. Is that a surprise to find out that the banks don't want to be investigated and that they're going to do everything in their power to make sure that doesn't happen? No, that's not a surprise to me at all. Walmart workers planning a Black Friday wage protest at more than 1,600 stores nationwide. A group of Walmart employees pushing for higher wages said on Friday that they were planning protests at 1,600 Walmart stores nationwide on Black Friday, which is obviously the largest shopping day of the year in the United States. The labor group Our Walmart said it had already protested at 1,200 to 1,400 Walmart stores last year on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. And Walmart, the largest private employer in the United States, has been a target for activists in the contentious national debate over proposals to raise the minimum wage. So more protests happening against Walmart. I don't know if it will affect anybody's Christmas shopping. It's kind of unusual because the average full-time hourly rate at Walmart is $12.92 compared to a federal minimum wage of $7.25. So do these people need to make more money? You know, I think everybody should make more money. If the money's fake, why aren't we paying everybody $100 an hour? Why wouldn't we use the technology that we have, which we used and promised to the people that they would be able to work 10 hours a week? Why aren't we doing all that? You know, well, it's because profit. Profit's more important than people. We have to keep up the illusion of scarcity and competition, because that is what unfortunately makes the society tick. So that is what's going on with Walmart. Good times. More economic news. A majority of Americans make less than $20 an hour, according to data compiled by Goldman Sachs. Most American workers earn below $20 an hour. Goldman Sachs economists David Merciel and Chris, with a name I can't pronounce, charged Labor Department data, crunched Labor Department data that is used to generate this monthly jobs report, and also this monthly job report is something that the market watches very closely, in particular from the survey of employers. On the chart, which is here in the news, and again, if you go to redpillreports.com, you'll be able to find this article under the headline, "A Majority of Americans Make Less Than $20 an Hour." It's a great chart. Shows that 19% of workers make less than $12.50 an hour. 32% of workers make between $12.50 and $20 an hour, while only 30% make above $20 an hour. And the economists also found that while wage growth has been soft, the fastest growth in income has come to the lowest paid workers. So that is what's going on with the American economy. While at the same time, seven U.S. CEOs made more than their companies paid in taxes, according to another report from CBC News. Seven of the largest 30 U.S. corporations paid more to their chief executive officers last year than they paid in U.S. federal income taxes, according to a study released yesterday that has been disputed by at least one of the companies. Amid talks in Washington about corporate tax reform, the study said that seven companies, which in 2013 reported more than $74 billion of combined pre-tax profits, came out way ahead on their taxes, gaining more than $1.9 billion in profits. And at the same time, the CEOs of each of these seven companies last year were paid an average of $17.3 million. And the seven companies cited were Boeing, Ford, Chevron, Citigroup, Verizon, JP Morgan and Chase, and General Motors, and the Institute for Policy Studies and the Center for Effective Government, which was the study's co-author, found that it's reflected, the findings reflected deep flaws in our corporate tax system. I think that kind of goes without saying at this point. What was the article we had last week about more money being parked overseas non-taxable accounts than was actually being allowed to be taxed in our own country? I think we had that article last week. So that, again, we need to have something needs to change in our corporate tax structure. These people, criminals, are just making so much ridiculous money for nothing. Just for nothing. It's crazy. Okay, let's move on to some tech news right now, because there's a lot of tech stuff happening right now that I think is pretty interesting. First and foremost, a major announcement coming out of New York City yesterday talking about the payphones. We're talking about the payphones on the streets. No longer will they provide shelter from the rain. No longer will they be an alcove for the quarreling couple seeking a private moment to reconcile. And it will offer little refuge to the prospective superhero requiring a wardrobe change. In fact, the payphone of tomorrow will include no traditional payphone at all, nor any method for payment, at least for communications within the United States. But beginning next year, city officials, and they announced this on Monday, said these payphone relics will evolve into something deemed far more practical. Thousands of Wi-Fi hotspots across the city providing free internet access, free domestic calling using cell phones or a built-in keypad, and a charging station for mobile devices and access to city services and directions. Now, this is straight from the mouth of Mayor Bill de Blasio and his administration. They issued a request for proposals earlier this year, and it awarded the project to a company called CityBridge, which is a consortium of companies including Qualcomm and Titan. And the initiative is known as Link NYC, will be paid for by the advertising revenues from the kiosk's digital displays. The administration officials framed the move as an extension of Mr. de Blasio's focus on inequality, and they are saying that low-income people, particularly blacks and Hispanics, rely disproportionately on cell phone browsing to get online, and all that data can really substantially add up to major data charges. So in a statement, Mayor de Blasio called this expanded broadband access essential for everything we need to do to be a fair and just city, adding that the system will be the fastest and largest municipal Wi-Fi network in the world. The city's Department of Information and Technology and Telecommunications said the network would be 100 times as fast as average municipal Wi-Fi systems and more than 20 times as fast as average home internet service in the city. And they also say that you can download a two-hour movie in about 30 seconds from these kiosks. Now, the kiosk's Wi-Fi range will extend 150 feet in every direction, and up to 250 devices will be able to use the network at each kiosk without diminishing service, and the heavy trafficked areas access points can be added also going forward. So blanketing the city with Wi-Fi, probably from a health standpoint, not a great deal, but at the same time, you know, the internet is probably the largest source of uncentralized, you know, information, and so bringing it to the people is a major step in getting us out from under this draconian system that we're under, because it's only through bottom up information spreading that we can be successful. So is this a good thing? Is it a bad thing? I'm kind of on the fence right now, but more on the positive side, even though I know that there are a lot of health concerns with Wi-Fi, and if you live right next to one of these things, that's probably going to be a detriment to your health. But at least you'll be able to get right online and find out all the natural products that you can use to combat Wi-Fi signals. So, I don't know. silver lining. I guess I'm looking for a silver lining on this one. The Russians are now testing a rocket propelled satellite catcher. That's right. They are testing a satellite capable of chasing down other orbiting spacecraft. And such technology, they're saying, could be used for a wide variety of uses, including to repair malfunctioning spacecraft, but could also be used to destroy or disable them. We're talking now about the Cosmos 2499 satellite, which separated from the upper stage of its rocket 2 years ago and then chased it down. The Russian mission follows similar on-orbit tests this year carried out by both the U.S. and China. The Cosmos 2499 was launched on the 25th of December back in 2013 as part of a seemingly routine mission to add new Rodnik communication satellites to an existing constellation. Previous Rodnik launches had carried a trio of spacecraft, but on this occasion, a fourth object was released into orbit. The U.S. military initially classified the object as debris, but in May of 2014, the Russian government told the UN that the launch had sent four satellites into orbits instead of just three. And in the meantime, satellite observers had seen the object using engines to perform a series of unusual maneuvers out in space that changed its orbit. And these maneuvers culminated on the 9th of November with a close approach to part of the rocket that originally launched from the satellite into orbit. And according to the satellite observer Robert Christie, who had been recording the craft's movements, Cosmos 2499 appears to have gotten within a few tens of meters of the inactive rocket stage. So they are working hard to chase objects down in space. Of course, that will open up the possibility as to whether or not they're going to be hostile to other countries' satellites, or at least give them an opportunity to retaliate if they feel that the satellites that are up currently are hostile to them. So that's what's going on in Russia tech development, I guess. And in American tech development, the U.S. Navy's first laser weapon capable of destroying a target has been deployed on a command ship in the Persian Gulf. The amphibious transport ship, the USS Ponce, has been patrolling with a prototype 30-kilowatt class laser weapon system since late August, according to officials. And the laser is mounted facing the bow and can be fired in several different modes, from a dazzling warning flash to a destructive beam, and can set a boat or a small drone on fire. So we have more technological things happening in the Navy right now, but it makes you wonder if the story about the USS Cook being bricked by a Russian EMP attack would have that same effect against a laser weapon. I don't know what's going to happen with that. Of course, it's in the Persian Gulf and it isn't in the Black Sea right now, so probably not a threat to Russia or a threat from Russia right now. But we'll keep an eye on that and let you guys know what happens there. I wanted to draw some attention to a very cool security app that has been put out by a company called Lifeline Response. They created a smartphone app which is designed to summon an aerial drone and the police to a scene of an attack. So the app has two settings which alert a call center in Erie, Pennsylvania. One activates as soon as a user who feels like they're in danger takes his or her thumb off of the app's dummy switch, and the other setting works if a present time elapses without the user entering a code to cancel the first alert. The user's GPS location is then transmitted to law enforcement, and the phone emits an alarm sound to signal that officials have been notified of the user's location. And in areas where drones are permitted, a drone will also be deployed at 60 miles an hour to the user's GPS location and then begin recording the incident on film. And according to Cahill, who is the founder of Lifeline Response, about 30 college, corporate, and hospital campuses have already signed on to be amongst the first to use the technology. And the drone's highest priority, according to the people who developed it, is to scare off the attacker and to prevent injury. And a speaker on the drone will alert warnings and also flashlights and things like that and give the assailant plenty of indication that he needs to remove himself from the situation. But then the drone can also stay with the victim, or it can opt to follow a fleeing suspect and then lead police to that. So I think that's a fantastic idea and a fantastic development. Right now, the app is available for iPhone and Android and will soon be available for the Windows smartphones. And the yearly subscription cost is only $10. And I'll tell you, that seems like a $10 worth spending if you ask me. I think that's a great idea. And the more we can get drones involved to be filming whatever is going on, I mean, this, you could use that. Technically, if you were pulled over by a law enforcement officer and you didn't trust them, you could get a drone there immediately and start filming the entire thing. I think that's a great idea. Satellite internet from SpaceX is coming soon, apparently. We talked a little bit yesterday about Google deploying balloons to provide internet to the country of Australia, and they are going forward on testing. But right now, SpaceX, of course, owned by Elon Musk, the gentleman responsible for the Tesla car company also, has come out and said that they are working very, very hard to get their microsatellite launches ready to go. They are probably still a few months away, according to Elon Musk, but they are working to install a new internet constellation, which could include as many as 700 satellites. Each one would weigh less than half of the smallest communication satellites currently in use and cost as little as $1 million apiece. And Elon Musk says he only needs about $1 billion to get the ball rolling. And it was all rumor and conjecture last week, but according to a new Wall Street Journal report, Elon Musk has come out on Twitter and said that although they are still in the early stages of development in these advanced microsatellites, they will have a follow-up announcement in about 2 or 3 months. So looking into the future a long, long ways, possibly covering the world with satellites to provide internet to everyone. It's a remarkable development there. I know I'm not going to get into the health news as much as I would like to right now. There are some pretty significant developments in the health world. There is a prescription drug vending machine now being installed on college campuses across America. And isn't that amazing that they are essentially going to be providing the 50 most requested and the most prescribed medication to college students without them having to go to their pharmacy? They're going to be able to go just to a vending machine, which is, I mean, talk about the wrong message to be sending to these kids. Here, guys, you know, I know things are bad right now, but just take this pill and you'll feel better. And isn't it also amazing that if those students were themselves selling amphetamines to one another, that they would be charged with criminal drug distribution? But when a machine is put on your campus to do the same thing, that's called evidence-based medicine, you guys. It's important to keep those two ideas separate. We're going to take a quick 3-minute break. We'll be back with Doreen Hannes. This is the Red Pill Report's daily broadcast. And I cannot thank you guys enough for being here. Stick with us for this break. We'll be right back. Doreen Hannes. My name's JD. Thanks, guys.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to allgov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
After work, I'm so tired that I want to be left alone to sleep.
Hey, listen to me.
Who are you?
I'm you years ago when you felt healthy and young and everything worked on your body. Do you remember that?
Yes. I wish I felt like that now.
You can feel like that again with a new microplant powder formulation called Iodine Now. It cleans the entire body from head to toe and feeds the body what it really needs. You'll be in a better mood and you'll find more drive in your romantic life. Really? I gotta try Iodine Now and feel good again. It also protects you from radiation, heavy metals, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including cancer and most major diseases. You'll be amazed. You can be your own doctor. I want to keep you out of the hospital and off pharmaceuticals. Wow, why are you so nice to me? Because I'm you. You're out of shape, and I need a better-looking future.
Call 888-910-4367. That's 888-910-4367. Iodine Now. Only at HitUSA.org.
Real people. Real radio.
Initiating the Truth Frequency.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the broadcast. It is straight up 11 o'clock Central Time, and we are live. And one of the beauties of live radio is that sometimes it can be a little bit unpredictable. And in that vein, we are having trouble reaching out to Doreen Hannes today. We will continue to try to get in touch with her. I was looking forward to a conversation with her, and perhaps we'll be able to reach out to her here a little bit later in the broadcast and make that connection happen for you guys. But until that happens, I feel like we should probably just keep plodding on with the news, because there obviously is so much to talk about. Let's get back into this story from Natural News right now, talking about this prescription drug vending machine issue. So this obviously is total and absolute insanity, and we're talking about the university or the Arizona State University here in this particular story, has installed a prescription drug vending machine called InstiMeds. And American college students, who are already probably the most over-medicated population on the planet, now have an even easier way to pollute their brains with SSRI drugs, antidepressants, antipsychotics, and prescription speed amphetamines, which are routinely abused by students for final exam cram study sessions. And he goes on to say that we have no doubt that if cocaine were somehow patented by GlaxoSmithKline, there would also be cocaine vending machines on college campuses by now, and probably marketed as a performance booster for students. And Big Pharma has already infiltrated and dominated medical schools and science journals. Drug company interests also completely dominate the mainstream media and government healthcare decision makers. Now they're trying to get their hooks into college campuses all across the countries, where students can be trained to believe that life isn't complete without prescription medication in their hands. And these pharma drugs are so safe, in fact, that the students can be dosed with 3 or 5 or maybe even 10 at a time, according to Big Pharma studies. And yet the drugs are so dangerous that the medication is secure in a 1,500-pound vault-like machine that also have remote alarms in response to any tampering, according to ABC. We wouldn't want any students looting the machines and then selling those drugs on your own, because that would, of course, be drug dealing. So when a student sells amphetamines to one another, that's a felony crime, you see. But when a vending machine sells amphetamines to the same exact students by prescription, that, of course, is called evidence-based medicine. And Arizona State University is the second university in America to install the prescription drug vending machines, and there are many more in the works. And the question that I have really is that is easier access to medication really the answer to student health? I think that that kind of goes without saying that this is just ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. But profit over people, that seems to be par for the course, guys. So profit over people, we're going to see that more coming out of the pharmaceutical industry because they make a whole lot of money. So there you go. And the cost to develop a new drug apparently has more than doubled to $2.56 billion. That is now the cost to bring a new medicine to market, on average more than double the price only 11 years ago. The higher cost comes from clinical trials, according to this report, that are larger and more complex, as well as more drugs that are failing in the development. And while the Food and Drug Administration is sometimes blamed for driving up costs because of the time it takes to review a new drug, that, according to this report, was not a factor. I think probably goes without saying that the lobbying of the pharmaceutical, which is the largest lobby group in America, ladies and gentlemen, and for those of you who don't understand how lobby groups work, just know this one fact, that for every dollar a lobby group spends, they return back to them $200 in profit. So is there any wonder that the pharmaceutical industry is the largest by something like 30 or 40 fold, the largest lobby group in Washington. I don't think that's any indication at all. And I think that that's probably where most of this cost comes from, is the bribery and the things like that. So there you go, with the cost of drugs going way up to produce them and bring them to market, which is fine with me because we shouldn't be taking all that garbage anyway. Pasteurized milk speeds death. We had that article last week, but there has been a follow-up report, according to Case Adams at Naturopath, that says that yogurt and cheese might actually have the opposite effect. So a large study, which we talked about last week, concluded by researchers from the City University in New York, found that pasteurized milk increased the risk of death and the risk of bone fractures, while yogurt and cheese seems to have the opposite effect. And this research, published by the British Medical Journal, followed more than 61,000 women between 39 and 74 years old at the beginning of the study, and 45,000 men aged between 45 and 79 years old at the beginning of the study as well. The research then followed the women for an average of 20 years and followed the men for an average of 11. The researchers then correlated the average number of glasses of milk per day and that was consumed over that period using food frequency questionnaires. The researchers measured deaths amongst the group and bone fracture rates, along with inflammation markers collected from urine and also interleukin, which was also collected from the blood. They determined that women died much sooner after drinking a lot of milk. If they were heavy milk drinkers, it would cause more potential for fractured bones and cause them to die more early than those people who don't drink that much milk. And the same thing happened with the men in the study. More cardiovascular disease if you drank more than 3 glasses of milk a day, only about a 10% increase. But they also found that cheese reduced mortality and heart disease. So put that in your crock pot and heat it up, you guys, because pasteurized milk, not good for you. Cheese, might be okay. The GMO-loaded food corporation is targeting natural foods for being quote-unquote unfair competition. So this is what I will ostensibly call the mayonnaise war. And perhaps you've heard of a company called Unilever. The company sells products under 1,000 different brands, including Hellmann's mayonnaise, the manufacturer or the shampoo Suave, the Klondike bars, and Tresemme, in addition to donating hundreds of thousands of dollars to shut down GMO labeling. The Megacore has decided to file a lawsuit now against an upstart vegan mayonnaise company claiming false advertising and unfair competition. But if you look at the ingredient, so Hellmann's is hanging their hat on the fact that they say they make real mayonnaise, right? They use simple ingredients, good eggs, vinegar, oils rich in omega-3, and they say it's definitely a step in the right direction to learn about, you know, what mayonnaise is really supposed to be according to Hellmann's. But if you look at the ingredients list and do a little deductive reasoning, you will see that they actually do have quite a bit of reason to be nervous about a company who might make a healthier version of mayonnaise, and that is that Hellmann's mayonnaise is full of soybean oil, okay? And mostly all of the soybean oil on the planet right now, we all know, is GMO soy, right? Non-organic eggs, likely from chickens who are kept in cruel circumstances and made also to eat GMO food, and the vinegar. Okay, Heinz was recently targeted for claiming that its vinegar was all natural when GMOs are obviously quite a bit less than natural. Now, will Unilever, the parent company of Hellmann's, face similar issues? Well, it remains to be seen. But the Anglo-Dutch mega conglomerate Unilever said the vegan company, Just Mayo, is already stealing market share from Hellmann's. And you can tell they are just super sad about it. When people start to vote with their dollars and refuse to buy toxic food, you can see why Hellmann's would start to get a little upset about that. And Unilever, which has swallowed Ben & Jerry's, they've swallowed Breyers, Lipton's, Miss Filbert, Slim Fast, Close Up, and a whole slew of other brands into its multinational guzzler. They argue that Hampton's Creek, which is the owner of Just Mayo, materially false and misleading Just Mayo. They're saying that the name Just Mayo is materially false and misleading, and its advertising is causing customers to believe that the thing that Just Mayo is selling is actually mayonnaise versus what Hellman's is saying is actually mayonnaise. So we're going to have to come down to some sort of court decision to actually decide what mayonnaise is. Yes, that is how silly the world that we live in has become, ladies and gentlemen. And there you go. So moving on again, vitamin D deficiency has been now linked to neurological diseases, and it also raises the risk of asthma attacks and more things like that, according to a report coming from Dr. Mercola over at Mercola.com. It's a fantastic place to look for health news. And if there was ever a top nutrition competition, vitamin D just might nab the title. It affects your DNA through vitamin D receptors that bind to specific locations on the human genome. And so far, scientists have identified nearly 3,000 different genes that are influenced by the vitamin D status. And a robust and growing body of research clearly shows that vitamin D is crucial and critical for optimal health and disease prevention. And some of these diseases include very difficult to treat conditions like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and multiple sclerosis. So these people out there that tell you that the sunshine is bad for you, they are lying. The people out there that tell you that they want you to slather yourself up with things that are going to be a million times more likely to cause cancer than the sun ever would, those people have an agenda, and it is to keep you unwell, ladies and gentlemen. They are tied into the pharmaceutical industry, which is got the entire business model is based on keeping you sick. So how can you trust an industry like that? Well, you can't. So again, sunshine, good. Sunblock, not so good. Vitamin D deficiency being linked now to a whole slew of neurological diseases. I highly recommend everybody get their fill of vitamin D every day and spend some time in the sunshine. My goodness, that is the engine that powers all life on the planet. How crazy would it be if it didn't affect us, ladies and gentlemen? I mean, just to think that we would be separate from nature in such a degree like that is just absolutely ridiculous. The dirty side of soap. New report coming from Science Daily. Triclosan is a common bacterial antimicrobial, which is common in personal hygiene products. And a new report has come out now saying that triclosan causes liver fibrosis and cancer in mice. This source was the University of California, San Diego Health Sciences, and they are saying, in summary, that triclosan, which is, as I mentioned, an antimicrobial commonly found in soaps, shampoos, toothpastes, and in many other household items, despite its widespread use, researchers report potentially serious consequences of long-term exposure to the chemicals, and they are also saying that the study, which was published the 17th of November by Proceedings of the National Academy of Science, showing that triclosan does cause liver fibrosis and cancer in laboratory mice through molecular mechanisms that are also relevant in humans. So be cautious. Again, we were just talking about the sun care stuff, but the warning goes out again to any of these products that you're putting on yourself. I mean, propylene glycol, that's what they use to winterize boats and RVs, guys. Do you really want to have that in your deodorant? Do you want that going right into your lymphatic system? Probably not. I mean, you would be astounded if you would actually spend some time looking at the shampoo and conditioner that you put on the largest organ in your body, which is your skin, guys. I mean, this is bad news, but another important piece of safety information coming out from Science Daily regarding dirty soap. Definitely keep that in the forefront of your mind as you're shopping for your personal care items at the store. Try and get the natural stuff. You know, there's plenty of it out there, plenty of good websites to go to find those things. And how about a $1 million baby? Not for sale here, ladies and gentlemen, but how about getting a $1 million bill just because you had a baby? That's what's happened now to a couple from Saskatchewan who gave birth in Hawaii. So the woman's name is Jennifer Hukalak, and her husband have been saddled with a medical bill of nearly $1 million after she gave birth to her daughter in the United States. She was 6 months pregnant when she flew to Hawaii for a holiday with her husband in October, and before the trip, she brought the Blue Cross insurance and received approval from her doctor to take the trip. But 2 days into the trip, her water broke, and she spent the next 6 weeks on bed rest in a Hawaiian hospital. Her daughter was born 9 weeks early and spent 2 months in intensive care. And while she is grateful that her 11-month-old daughter is now very healthy, her and her husband were left with a $950,000 medical bill. And Blue Cross, of course, is refusing to pay any of the amount, arguing that her condition was pre-existing. And in a letter to her, the company noted the following. They said, Miss Hukalak was diagnosed and treated for a high-risk pregnancy in the 6 months prior to her departure, and as Ms. Hukalak is currently hospitalized and being treated for this high-risk pregnancy, any expenses incurred are not eligible under terms of her policy. And of course, according to her doctor, she did not have a high-risk pregnancy. She actually had a bladder infection, which led to some bleeding, and the specialists in Hawaii have corroborated that same story, saying that there is no link between her bladder infection and the early birth of her daughter. But probably going to be facing a fairly large battle with Blue Cross. I mean, I know that having a daughter would probably be one of the most monumentally important and wonderful experiences of your life, but imagine going through something that wonderful and then just being saddled with $1 million bill. I mean, who has $1 million to pay for something like that? Nobody does. And that's why we have insurance to classify pregnancy as a pre-existing condition. It's just disgusting. It's just disgusting. Let's hop back into a little bit of health. A little bit of tech news right now, because we didn't get to all of it earlier. And there is a really great app. I'm not sure if all of you are familiar with it, called WhatsApp, WhatsApp. It is a fantastic independent messaging app. So it is essentially like an instant message app that you can have on your iPhone or your Android. And it's been around for a good long while. It's fantastic if you have friends in Canada or overseas and want to send text messages without incurring the international charges. And I've been a proponent of WhatsApp for a long, long time, using it on my devices. But they just turned on end-to-end encryption for every single one of their users, which is exceptionally awesome, in my opinion. Growing up in the Soviet Ukraine in the 80s, WhatsApp founder Jean Koum learned to distrust the government and to detest its surveillance after he immigrated to the United States and created his ultra-popular message service system decades later. He vowed that WhatsApp would take whatever means necessary to remove eavesdropping as an option for anyone from his app. And they are now following through on that anti-snooping promise at a what is being qualified as an unprecedented scale. And as of yesterday, WhatsApp announced that they would be implementing end-to-end encryption, which is an upgrade to its privacy protections that makes it nearly impossible for anyone to read users' messages, even the company itself. And WhatsApp will integrate the open source software TextSecure, created by a privacy-focused nonprofit Open Whisper Systems, which scrambles messages with a cryptographic key that can only be used and only be accessed by the person and never leaves his or her device. So the result then is practically uncrackable encryption for hundreds of millions of phones and tablets that are already using WhatsApp. And by some measure, now the world's largest ever implementation of the standard of encryption in a messaging service. So awesome, awesome news if you're out there trying to avoid, especially now given the fact that Republicans are not going to do what they said they would do last week and try and curb the NSA's data collection, another fantastic reason to follow through on protecting your own information. Because again, what it comes down to is that nobody in the government gives any kind of care about you or your information. You are the product now, and anything that they can glean from you, they're going to try to. So I highly recommend WhatsApp as a messaging service for your phone, and very excited to report that they are moving towards encryption, or have now released encryption. So that is great news. In a completely unrelated story that I want to get to anyway, the virus responsible for the melting starfish. We've talked about that potentially being a result of the Fukushima disaster, but scientists have now isolated a virus that they believe is the sole cause of the wasting disease that is affecting starfish all up and down the west coast of the United States. And so a large team of Canadian and American researchers claim they have now solved this mystery. Last year, of course, scientists observed the outburst of a plague in the Pacific Ocean as thousands of sea stars suffering from a mysterious illness in the summer of 2013 began to waste away. The disease infected almost 100% of its victims to a terrible death, and it certainly left scientists in a state of confusion for several months since no one was aware of the cause of the deaths of these starfishes. And later on, the scientists named this disease as the sea star wasting disease. Therefore, the team of researchers performed an experiment in order to catch the virus in the open. They accumulated sunflower sea stars from a place in Washington State, and they supplied UV-treated filtered seawater to all of those sunflowers. Afterwards, they compared the tissue of the infected sunflowers with that of the non-infected ones, and the study disclosed that a complete genome of the new virus has been found. And at last, researchers found the virus, which was responsible for the deaths of the sea stars all the way from Mexico to Alaska. And it was a very difficult job, according to the scientists, to determine the virus, because a single drop of water can contain numerous viruses. And the researchers, however, claimed that this virus first emerged probably about 72 years ago and has subsequently infected millions of marine organisms. And the scientists have renamed the microbe as the plague behind the sea star-associated denzavirus. So at least we have removed Fukushima as a potential cause for the wasting away of sea life in the Pacific Ocean, and I guess that's a good thing. Now, whether or not they're going to be able to combat this virus will remain to be seen, but we will keep you guys all up to date on that. We try and do that as much as possible around here. I want to move into some energy and environmental news. This is probably not going to be good news for everyone, but it does need to be discussed. Over the objection of environmental groups and Virginia's governor, a federal management plan has released a plan on Tuesday to allow a form of natural gas drilling known as fracking to occur in parts of the largest national forest on the East Coast. Yikes. The U.S. Forest Service originally planned to ban fracking in the 1.1 million acre George Washington Natural Forest, but energy companies cried foul after the draft of the plan was released back in 2001, and it would have been the first outright ban on the practice in national forests. So what's important to remember here now, people, is that these national forests are supposed to be protected for the benefit of us, right? The benefit of the people. And that's not what we're seeing happening. We're seeing now them allowing their cronies to come in and to reap profit off of our collective heritage, which are these national parks and national areas that are supposed to be for all of us. And I can promise you that the profits that are going to be made from this fracking, they're not going to be here to benefit you and I, you guys. They're not going to be here to make the park a better place. Not going to be here to transfer wealth back into our hands, because, you know, we trade on the idea that we have all of these reserves. You know, those reserves that we have, the natural gas and the oil, that's how we substantiate the value of our country. You know, well, it's not really true. If you'd listened to the show with myself and Roger earlier last week, you'd know that really what powers our country is your future wages, your future time, talent, and energy being locked into the financial system via your birth certificate and via capitalization of your labor. But it could also be argued that our national reserves in terms of oil and mineral wealth do have something to do with how powerful our country is. And so we use those things to promote our own benefit, but we're not using them to promote our own benefit. We're giving the money to large oil companies and manufacturing companies, people like Halliburton, who lobbied the EPA to get them unqualified from the Safe Drinking Water Act just in the event of fracking. So now they're going to be moving into the national parks, and there's no way that fracking is not going to destroy the park. I mean, there's just no way that you could do an operation like that and not have a very large and far-reaching detrimental effect. You can see that looking back at some of the things that have happened in Pennsylvania. Just absolutely disgusting that this agency is going to go forward on these things. I'm just not thrilled about it at all, but I felt that it was probably worth bringing to everyone's attention today. So that is what's going on in your environmental news and things like that. Try and keep a close eye on things that are going on there in pretty much in every field, guys. And this is by one of the first days we haven't had a guest, so I'm getting an opportunity to dig deeper into the news than we normally do. I think we're getting ready to go to a 3-minute break, and this is our normal bottom of the hour commercial break, and I do appreciate you guys for sticking with us through this. But I think what I'd like to do in the last half hour, we'll obviously go through some more news. There's plenty of things going on in the news to bring to your attention. But I think I'd like to go ahead and open up the phone lines also, because we haven't had an open phone line yet on the show, and I would certainly love to hear from any of you who are out there listening right now. If you have feedback about the show, if you've got guest ideas or topic ideas, if you hate our musical selection for the bumpers, if there's anything at all that you think you'd like to talk to us about, if you've heard any chatter, if you've heard some underground information that you don't think that we're covering because it hasn't reached us yet, you know, part of what we're all doing here is building a forum for all of us to speak to one another, for all of us to get information out. And that, I think, is the most important thing that we can do, is recognize the fact that we are all in this together, and that without you, the listener, we would be no one. We would just be here, as I said, talking to my cat earlier. So it looks like I'm getting some indication now that we might be able to get Doreen Hannes on, so we are going to play it both ways, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to have the whole phone lines open up. You can call in at 866-378-7884. And that phone line will be open after the break when we come back from this 3-minute break. But I am going to try and put a call into to Doreen Hannes over the break, and we'll see if we can get a quick interview with her. I know she has a lot of pertinent information regarding our fight with the agencies who are trying to keep us all from being self-sufficient. So I will give her a holler here during this break, and when we come back, we'll have Doreen Hannes on. But in the event that we don't, if you're out there and you feel like you'd like to call in, do feel free to call in 866-37-TRUTH. Also, please, again, go to truthfrequencyradio.com. Make a slight donation if you can. Help us stay at the very top of the pile of independent, fantastic alternative information and news. The network works so hard to get all of us this wonderful venue so we can talk to you guys every day. And, of course, this is the Red Pill Report's daily broadcast for the 19th day of November. My name is J.D. Moore, and we are live. We are going to jump to a 3-minute break right now, so stay with us. When we come back, we are, I'd say, 99% sure we will be talking to Doreen Hannes. So do stay here with us for that. Appreciate you guys sticking with us. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Stay tuned, you guys.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN. Worldwide.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you had the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a 1-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Seed Vault, 20 seed varieties for only $37.95, Tattler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com, for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
Since our founding in 2005, we at YouTube have continually strived to bring you the best possible video experience on the internet. But now, we're updating YouTube to make it even better and give our users more of what they want. Introducing YouTube Plus, the new and improved version of YouTube.
Advertising, I mean user experience, has always been our number one priority on YouTube. Recently, we've noticed that there is an abundance of clear white blank space in the margins of each page of YouTube. So we asked ourselves, why don't we fill these with bright, flashy ads? Now, every page will have full-size ads on the edges, and they may or may not be relevant to the videos you're watching. These ads might be unsavory enough to make you want to hide your screen from your parents, but that's what makes YouTube Plus all the more interactive.
'Cause what are you gonna do? Switch to Vimeo?
YouTube Plus. What are you gonna do about it?
Covert Report with Susan Lindauer.
Saturday and Sunday on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. We did it. We were successful. We successfully tracked down Doreen Honest, who has elected to join us late in the hour right now. So we have a short segment today, and I'm hopeful that we will get her back in the future, because I imagine we will only be scratching the surface of all of these crazy things that are going on as these agencies and the people who should not be in power are applying pressure to our lives in order to keep us from being self-sufficient. And to outline some of those external forces, Doreen Honest has agreed to join us on the show today. And for those of you who don't know, Doreen has been an avid student of the effects of the World Trade Organization's free trade agreements on the livelihoods of citizens in the United States since its establishment of the WTO and the ratification of NAFTA back in the mid-90s. Her predominant area of interest has been the impact on independent agriculture and the ramifications of these agreements upon food freedom and the consolidation of access to market for independent growers. One of her dominating operating principles out there, ladies and gentlemen, is that there are two types of people in the world: those people who want to be left alone and those people who simply refuse to allow those people to be left alone. Doreen, thank you so much for joining us on Red Pill Reports today.
Hey there, Katie. I'm very sorry it was coming through as a friend's Skype number. I was like, I can't talk to you right now. I'm waiting for a radio call program.
Well, that was probably my fault. I should have given you a heads up that the number would be coming from Skype. Just more indication that I need to get better at my job. But we know for a fact that you probably don't need to get better at your job, because you've been leading the fight against these crazy agencies trying to keep us all from being self-sustaining for a very, very long time. Would you do us a favor and just kind of give us a little bit more insight into your background and how you got so geared up to fight this fight for us, Doreen?
Basically, I was backed into a corner. What happened is, you know, we moved here to the Missouri Ozarks to raise our family and try and have some peace. And I was going to do with our older kids a dairy goat program so that they could, you know, basically understand, one, that we all work for food, right, and two, that when you put effort in, generally you get a return on it. Well, what happened was that the USDA came up with a lovely program called the National Animal Identification System, and there was no way to continue down that road. And so I really became involved in understanding, one, the processes used to halt us from, one, achieving independence, and two, from profiting from our labor. And I got very, very involved in property rights, and through that process, I understand the mechanisms that are in position by all of the agencies, and it's just an effective foil, how they work and how they co-opt not only our capacity to make a living, but the ability of our states to actually govern us through elected representation instead of through agency advocates that are just really, forgive the vernacular, but they're whores for federal money. And the federal government doesn't have any money. They can't give anyone anything unless they take it away from somebody else.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. Yep.
You know, so at this juncture in our time, we're taking it away from our great-great-grandchildren, you know, in the forms of grants and all of these cooperative agreements and things of that nature. But, you know, right now, probably the biggest threat and the most underground effect, if you will, is going on in the area of watershed management and control of all water that falls on a watershed, which is every place, because nobody lives any place that isn't in a watershed.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, the EPA has just recently ended their comment period on their desire to change the definition of waters of the United States. And what they wanted to change is to remove the term navigable, thereby making every puddle, every runoff from a gutter, every little prairie pothole, every wet weather creek, every ditch, every koi pond into waters of the United States.
Wow.
Giving them authority to manage that. And the way that the agencies work is they run off of executive order.
Did we lose Doreen? We might have lost Doreen.
Oh, did I fall away?
You did fall away for
a second.
Just go back maybe one sentence, if you would.
Okay. The federal level agencies run under the executive branch, so take directives from the executive, in this case Obama. And Obama and all of the other presidents going back to George Herbert Walker Bush were sworn to the UN Convention on Biodiversity, i.e. Agenda 21. So they work together. The federal agencies work together via cooperative agreements and partnership agreements. So you have the U.S. Department of Agriculture working in concert and the FDA and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers ad nauseum.
Wow.
And they have guidance documents between the agencies, each other's initiatives and guidelines. So then what they do is the individual federal agencies make grants, cooperative agreements, partnership agreements, and memorandums of understanding with their parallel at the state level. And then the state level becomes sworn to the federal level's guidelines, recommendations, and initiatives. And then the state level, they hand out grant money to little, you know, third-party organizations. In Missouri, we have an awful lot of, you know, natural streams advocates and things of that nature. They get grant money from the state to their guidelines and their standards. So in this case, the thing that I'm talking about is what's called a non-point source management plan for pollution. And every state has this same thing going on. And what they're trying to do at the state level is the same thing that EPA is trying to do at the federal level, which is to bring about control of all water that falls on any watershed and bring that into their control so that they can find, analyze, and control what people do on their own property. And they do it. There's no elected official that's accountable. There's no real public oversight. In the case of the EPA's rule, they just received in excess of 62,000 comments, and the federal level Congress is trying to constrain the EPA from changing their own definition.
Right.
It's just, I mean, it's crazy. The lunatics are running the asylum here, JD.
Oh, but, absolutely. Well, you know what strikes me as startling about this is that just the removal of that one word, navigable, the effect of that on the EPA's power it's just incredible to me that this one small language change can lead to so much power being given to an organization, like you just said, that has virtually no oversight and no accountability, you know? It's insane.
Right. Well, they don't have any oversight, and they don't really have any accountability. What they do have is the capacity to fine and penalize people for doing what, you know, the day before their rule was completely legal and lawful.
Yes.
And we have numerous instances of this. Fairly recently, there was a couple in Wyoming that put in a pond on their property.
Yep.
And they basically enhanced the wildlife there. All of the wildlife was coming to the pond. They introduced fish into the pond, so birds are feeding and things are growing very well. And suddenly the EPA goes after them with a $75,000 per day fine for not getting the right permits according to the EPA.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and this is not unusual. In Idaho, a couple had purchased property and they were bringing in landfill to begin to build. And this went all the way through to the Supreme Court. And that couple's last name was Sackett. Well, the EPA was fining them, again, $75,000 per day for not getting the right permission slips from the EPA, which they wouldn't give anyway.
Exactly.
And what happens is they just see the capacity to fine people. And we've had this in every aspect of land use and capacity to profit from being on the land. One of the most striking things, and this ended up actually being overturned, but was a couple named the Dollar Heights here in Missouri who were selling rabbits to Branson, to the, I can't remember, I said, shoot, I don't remember the exact entity, but they were selling them for pets, for, you know, petting zoo kind of things.
Oh, okay.
And they sold $4,500 worth of rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Well, the USDA, in regard to the Animal Welfare Act, shows up at their place and is examining them and tells them that their cages are not big enough. And then they said, oh, you're selling them for exhibition, therefore we're in violation of the Animal Welfare Act, and they fined them $4 million.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding
you.
And this is under the Animal Welfare Act, which, you know, the programs are administered differently, and they just basically were bullying them incessantly, and finally it ended up getting thrown out because public uproar was very, very strong. But the Dollar Heights were really awakened by that, and they became property rights advocates as a result of their own experience, which made them physically ill. They got entirely out of rabbits, and they became exceedingly aware of how the agencies are destroying people's lives without any benefit of capacity to address, without due process, without any kind of warning. They can just stomp on people's lives. Judy Ellerhite wrote a book. It's called Down the Rabbit Hole, if your listeners are interested in getting that. I think you can get it on Kindle. But about their awakening process and how this particular, you know, atrocity was played out by the agency, the USDA.
Mm-hmm.
And for people, if they only take one aspect of agency overreach and research how that works, they'll have a working understanding of every agency's like methodology.
Right.
You can, you know, you just take that and you cross apply it. And I mean, it always goes back to the agencies expanding the authority that they were given via the rulemaking process. Yeah. I mean, it's nonstop. But the, you know, like with civil forfeiture, with these, international property maintenance codes, the agencies have the capacity to bankrupt people, to destroy their ability to stay on the land, just by allegation and by very, very loose, definitions of things like, you know, your science-based standards. For instance, it's really quite sad because I'm a big fan of science, and they've destroyed it.
Right.
You know, for instance, on this non-point source pollution management plan, one of the things I'd like to read you their actual definition of non-point source management, or non-point source pollution, rather.
Yes, please.
Okay. This is what they say. They say that non-point source pollution occurs when water runs over land or through the ground and picks up natural or human-made pollutants and deposits them in surface water or groundwater. Okay? They say pollutants commonly associated with non-point source pollution include phosphorus and nitrogen. Blah-bitty-blah. And then you want to know what they define a pollutant as.
Yes.
Dredged soil, solid waste, sewage, garbage, munitions, chemical waste, biological material, heat,
wow.
Rock,
what?
Sand.
What?
Dirt. Dirt is, yes.
It sounds like what you just said was dirt, rocks, and sand are now classified by the EPA as a pollutant, which happens to be, I don't know if you know this, you said you liked science, I'll give you some insight, most of the world made of dirt, rocks, and sand. Just saying.
Right, just saying. You know, and then biological material.
Yeah, what does that mean?
And that is, exactly. It's like microbes, pollen, leaves,
right.
You know.
A stick?
Right, that's biological material. Actually, yes, sticks are a pollutant.
Okay, so
let's
just say then, Doreen, that you're sitting at home right now and you're listening to this radio broadcast and you have never heard of any of this before. You know, you realize now that you're in a position where the EPA can say that the water coming out of your downpipes, you know, has potential now to be investigated for pollution. What is it? What can we say to these people? If there's anything that we can say to kind of calm their fears a little bit, but what else do we need to give them a heads up on as a potential that could be happening on their property, and what can they do about it to prevent it if there's any such a thing, you know?
I hate to say it, but you really have to get involved at the local level.
Okay.
Your elected officials. And you have to, one, know your rights and stand on your rights. And, you know, basically, if somebody shows up on your property and says that they're there to investigate an allegation or, you know, anything that has to do with your property and what you have on your property, you must demand a search warrant, and you have to tell them, nope, you're trespassing.
Yes.
Unless you have a search warrant, you know, and I mean, that's the only way that we can protect our rights is by pushing, because the bureaucrats, and that's what these people are, you know, they just want to basically make themselves necessary by gathering revenue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, any of these bureaucratic, you know, any of these agencies or institutions, really, all of them, you know, they only exist for self-perpetuation. That's what we were talking about, like this Ebola outbreak or the potential Ebola outbreak and the government's plan for contingency of government. And I had to explain to people that, you know, the government's main plan is for contingency of it, you know, of itself. It's want itself to go on. It doesn't care about you. It's not about the continuity of your well-being. It's about the continuity of government. And I think you can say that about any of these agenda-based organizations now, couldn't you?
Well, right, and if it has to do with any agency in any guise, it is a continuation of their job, which is, it can be an inspector, it can be a code enforcer, it can be, you know, your property management code within, if you live within one of those gated communities or something, you're in deep trouble.
Oh, yeah.
know. But I mean, as far as like out in the country, the interesting thing is, out in the rural areas, this stuff is coming to bear, and most of the property maintenance code things are supposed to be unenforceable in rural areas.
Really?
But yes. But what's happening is you've got, and this is largely, again, we're going grant process here,
right.
You got HUD and Health and Human Services and the Department of Transportation who are making agreements with whatever your form of county government may be,
right,
to implement livable, walkable communities and provide, like, low-income, basically grants and, you know, lower... The USDA is involved here too, and I'm sorry, but I was kind of flying off the seat of my pants on this. kind of going with like the Housing and Urban Development USDA secured loans things.
Mm.
And so they get tied basically executing these international standards and guidelines for property management by taking federal funds, JD. And they don't even necessarily know it. When you take federal funding from one federal agency, you're taking it from all of them.
Right, right.
They're all tied together. So, you know, the best thing, you can't sit here and say, I want to be free and independent, give me a grant.
Right, right.
You know, it doesn't work that way. You have to pay way and stay outside of that federal grant, federal loan system. Otherwise, you don't have any authority over your property.
Right.
You lose it, you know. And with the hold that they have on our economics, I think, personally, that the thing that people need to do is begin to deal directly with each other,
yes,
removing their control at the point of commerce, because that's when you involve a third party.
Right.
So if you deal directly with each other on things, then it kind of cuts those bureaucrats, those code enforcers, and out of the loop.
Yeah, well, and I think that is obviously the reason that they're doing everything they can to keep people from being independent, because if people are all out there growing their own food and bartering, there's really no need to have, you know, an overarching control grid set up. So I think that's probably
right,
where this agenda is coming from, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, and also they have us pretty much in the position where we've become accustomed to asking for permission to do what we have to do to feed ourselves, you
right,
know.
Right.
No matter what, you know, information is really the only non-literally productive thing that has value, that has actual value, you know. So it's like we've been taken out of actually making things, producing things.
Right.
Creating into the point where, you know, we're paper pushers and we put numbers on computer screens and do everything digitally without having our actual hands-on involvement. And we need to get back into providing for ourselves and providing for our neighbors and others. You know,
yeah,
it's the biggest hedge against the insanity that some of these people want to bring on us that we have.
I absolutely completely agree with that. And that is really kind of one of the on-running or ongoing motifs here at RedPillReports.com is that, you know, we talk a lot about people making the correct decisions to start organizing their communities effectively, to start being prepared to take care of yourself if something happens, because it's going to be a lot easier to make that transition now than it is, you know, after the internet goes off and people are scrambling around trying to find seeds and, all the things that they need to survive. So making that transition now is obviously super duper important. But it's really interesting to me to see, this huge conglomerate of, it kind of goes back to like them outlawing the wood stoves last year, you know, when everybody then went out and panicked and bought their wood stoves and stuff like that. But it's just so crazy to me that we have this agenda trying to cut us off at every single pass. You know, we're trying to get independent and self-sufficient and create quality communities for our kids and our grandkids to live in. And they are just absolutely not going to allow that to happen. Or at least they're going to do everything in their power to make that difficult for us. I think is the reason we just need to keep harping on about how people need to make that decision.
Well, right, because, this is my standby statement, and I will stand by it. Everything comes down to the consent of the governed. Mm-hmm. They can make all the rules that they want to. They can pass whatever law they want to, but there's still more of us than there are of them. Mm-hmm. Well, and if we do not consent, if we refuse to allow them to run over us, then they have a problem. And that's what we need to continually do. And we do need to, we have to be involved with our local government and with our county government, because that's the best way for us to be able to have a good working relationship and keep them apprised of what our standards and guidelines are, as opposed to the agency standards and guidelines. Mm-hmm. You know, and we don't need to be adversarial with everyone, but we have to be firm and we have to know what we're talking about. You know, and that's one of the groups I've been involved with for years and years. It's the Property Rights Coalition. Mm-hmm. And we've done a really good job, and now there are numerous other property rights groups across the state, and we're doing a good job of staying in touch with our local and state representatives and thwarting some of this. For instance, we were successful in getting the federal level agency to drop the Blue Ways project here, which was another water control deal.
Wow.
You know?
Mm-hmm. So we can win. We can win. You can fight back. There is remedy out there. We're running out of time for today, Doreen, but I'm very thankful for you for joining us today. I'd love to have you back on the program when it's convenient for you, if that's okay.
Oh, absolutely. I appreciate it. I'm sorry about the mess up on the technology.
I will take the heat on that. That was my fault. It's no big deal. I'm really glad we did get an opportunity to talk to you today. I want to encourage everyone to go to your website, which is truthfarmer.com, so they can keep up with you and learn more about all of these things going forward. Doreen, thank you so much for joining us on Red Pill.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You do the same. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you have made it with us once again through another broadcast. This is the Red Pill Reports for the 19th day of November. Tomorrow, James Perloff will be joining us for a very intricate history lesson in the collusion between the banking interests and the military-industrial complex. You will not want to enjoy that. My name is JD, and this has been your daily
news. iPhone 5S has been very successful in the U.S., but we realize that people here in India cannot afford the iPhone. That's why we've decided to work closely with the Apples to bring the iPhone experience to India. We call it the iPhone 5X. The iPhone 5X was built with advanced new hardware. The phone runs on the new Apple's A10 Snapdragon 7870HD 2-liter turbo Galaxy 29 GHz processor. Our advanced operating system features some of the best apps out there. We have classics such as Instantgram, Samosa Crush Saga, World of Duty, Call of Warcraft, and Temple Run, in which you get to run from an actual mob of Hindu priests.
And to wrap it all up, we have 24/7 customer service lines in case you idiots need help with your new iPhones.
Hello, welcome to iPhone-y Tech Support. This is Ben Katesh.
Are you sure you're not one of those outsourced white people?